Hey everybody, welcome to Lex Line, brought to you in conjunction with our friends at Rug Radio, where we talk about the new and latest developments in Web3, blockchain, NFT, and crypto law. As always, nothing we talk about should be considered legal or financial advice. If you have a specific legal question, you should consult a lawyer. You should do it privately, not on a recorded Twitter space. Yes, we do record these. And if you miss us today live, you can always catch up with us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Great to have Jenko in the house. I wanted to start the conversation today, Jenko, with a lot of the FUD that's been going around about this Rolling Stone article that was published. Basically, the TLDR on this article is that NFTs are worthless now. And one of the things that struck me about the article was the clickbaity title, which was NFTs are finally worthless at this point, which I found to be kind of a humorous title for this. So it begs the conversation, is this potentially a good thing? And that's kind of like the take I want to take today is, could we pull something positive out of this reporting? So the article was published a couple of days ago, and it cited a study that included an analysis of 73,257 NFT collections and found that of those 73,257 NFT collections, 69,795 of them currently have a market cap of zero ETH. The article then suggesting that 95% of NFTs are now essentially worthless and far cry from the banana Rolling Stone cover that we previously saw, which incidentally generated Rolling Stone NFTs, which I find comical. But now apparently everything has gone to zero and NFTs are worthless. There was some pushback in the community. A lot of people on Twitter have commented about the fact that this is not different from traditional art markets, especially for secondary sales of collectibles and art. CoinDesk published an article today talking about the fact that, okay, yes, NFTs are trading at lower volumes, but the traffic is not non-existent. There's $63 million last week traded. Some collections, of course, like the Bored Apes, are still trading at a respectable price. Of course, Punks are still trading at a respectable price. Fidenzas, Swiggles. So is this really an accurate report of what's going on in the marketplace, or is this just clickbait media coverage? Some of the things that I think we should be mindful of when it comes to an analysis of this is that it overlooks the intrinsic and the perceived value that many find in NFTs and collectibles and art in particular, and that just like in traditional art and collectibles like baseball cards, NFTs definitely represent a unique form of value that caters to a very specific niche audience. And I think that ultimately, in my opinion, there is some long-term value here. This is very novel technology, which is introduced a new and innovative way to represent ownership and value on a digital blockchain for an asset. It is in a lot of ways analogous to baseball cards and collectibles, but to suggest that it is totally worthless at this point, it seems to be subjectively unfair to paint it in that perspective. And I think that there is perceived worth in NFTs that can still serve a positive thing for both collectors, founders, because I think going forward, this down cycle is going to refine the NFT mechanism. It's going to foster innovation. I think it's going to lead to a conversation about sustainability, because one of the things that was touched on in this article was the environmental impact of NFTs. And I think it's ultimately going to enhance the quality of the NFT space. So to suggest they're seemingly worthless kind of glosses over that. And I think over time, certain critical factors like scarcity and historical significance, which we've seen pop up early in the bull run, people looking back at more historic NFTs and seeing value in them, the community building aspects of them, and I think just a shift in market sentiment could all be external factors that could bring NFTs back to the forefront. So, Jenko, that's my two cents, sort of my little introductory monologue. I would love to get your thoughts on this. Obviously, you're a huge advocate of the technology. So what are your thoughts on all this, Jenko?
Thanks. Thanks, Carlo, for giving me a summer vacation, keeping the show going. I read your piece and I suggest others to do it. You really outlined the issue well. I couldn't agree with you more. I think to get more specific, I think that I try and read the culture more than kind of the numbers. So like if you're, they had, you know, X thousand out of X thousand are worthless. I just took the headline and the way it was written and the way it was presented as an example of why like a decentralized media company like Rug Radio is an obvious future to legacy media, where it wasn't informative. It didn't hit the reader's expectation base. It wasn't like, that's not a good methodology to come up with any, I don't know. It just was another one of those NFTs are dead, which culturally kind of reinvigorates the energy around the people who are building all the infrastructure for all of the uses that you named. Like NFTs are a broad range of products or licenses or proofs, and that, you know, what could happen in 12 or 24 or 36 months is nothing compared to how that plays out. So I think the value in the future is as much as has such, the upside is as much as it ever was, regardless of what some collections trade at now. I think that a lot of the speculation of what's going to be historical, people missed the mark on in 2021 or were wrong, but that doesn't matter as much because unlike baseball cards, like if baseball went away, there still would be some, the technology is not going away. The innovators are going to find ways to integrate it into to media, into entertainment, into finance, whether, you know, Rolling Stone writers like it or not, or even realize it or not. So it was a funny memed article and headline, but the way you broke down the issues was really quite methodical, and you really laid it out well. So I agree with the way you see it.
Yeah, thanks, Jenko. You know, it got me thinking about it last night. I pulled out a box of old baseball cards and I actually pinned that up in the nest because I tweeted about this as kind of a to kind of play on the whole meme and the comical nature of this. Breaking news, 98% of baseball card collection worthless. You know, look, it is definitely value that's perceived. It's in the eye of the beholder, and it has a bit of nostalgia to it when it comes to baseball cards. And there's no denying that there are grails in the baseball card world. And I think I tend to agree with you. One of the areas where I think this article definitely focuses attention and sparks a debate is with respect to the current, let's say, cleanup of the market. There is a lot of stuff out there that came out fast and furious, perhaps could arguably be low quality, could have really not the type of projects that would really gain a lot of value or perceived value in the public. But maybe this moment and this sort of an article triggers a market correction, a mechanism to help filter out what has been essentially overvalued, overplayed, low quality, and maybe refocuses on innovation. And who knows, maybe some of these projects can get recycled by some very shrewd investors who see the potential for taking the artwork and maybe the dormant community and putting some life back into it. So I wouldn't be cleaning out your wallet, not financial advice, but I personally am not going to clean out my wallet of the old NFTs I bought, because you just never know what's possible in the future as innovation continues to get traction. Ira, our dear friend, you're up. Would love to hear your thoughts on this as well. Long time no talk.
Long time no talk. And I also echo Ray's point, Carlo. I know that you've been carrying on this show over the summer. And you're doing a great job, and I would encourage you to keep going with this, because I think it's a wonderful place for us to be able to brainstorm. So, look, if we go all the way back to the whatever the beginning we want to call of NFTs, they are so profoundly important, and they were important then, and they're important now. So we have to go back to basics, I think. And that is that for most folks, an NFT is a proof of license. For some folks, it's a proof of membership, you know, proof of a gate pass, whatever it is on the blockchain. So why are NFTs important? Why is their technological and economic underpinning so profoundly innovative? That's really the question. And I'm here to basically say that whatever made it so important back when it first started is why it's important today. And we go back as lawyers, and that's what we are. We're in a law show, LexLine, to the first sale doctrine. And when we go ahead and we go to Sotheby's and Christie's and we watch the folks auctioning off artwork, they're auctioning it off because they don't need the permission of the painter, the artist, the sculptor, because the first sale doctrine allows them to go ahead after they buy it and not have to ask permission again to go ahead and sell it. And then you have collectors, and they know they have safe harbors for being able to buy and sell and transact the way that they see fit. When Web 2 started, folks were trading all sorts of artwork and JPEGs and, as we know, MP3 files, and they were being sued into oblivion for doing it. There is no digital first sale doctrine, and that created a problem. You had MP3.com getting destroyed by the music industry, and you had the BitTorrent cases, and then all of a sudden someone said, hey, what if we were to go ahead and tokenize this so we can have a proof of license tethered to the media? And then right around the time COVID came along, there's been a very quick evolution of tethering this proof of license or the NFT to the media so folks can go ahead and have what is equivalent to the first sale doctrine, but online. And this would be transferring licenses between each other. And that led to collectability. And that led to the euphoria and the adrenaline rush and all the wonderful things that go along with collecting. It led to some bad things as well. And we're still ironing them out right now with hopefully new legislation and cases. But it led to great things. It led to folks being able to sell from, you know, third world nations into the rest of the world. It led to artists being able to make a living from home. It led to an enormous amount of economic benefits. It made the world more flat. And so now we're asking, well, are NFTs really worthless? No. We just had a number of years that actually proved how incredibly valuable the technology is, how some folks became multimillionaires, how Bored Apes showed us a new way of both membership as well as what we'll call PFP, or profile picture collectability. We had Beeple, you know, selling for tens of millions of dollars. We have proven over the last number of years that NFTs are here to stay, that their innovation is profoundly important. And I'm frankly very, very optimistic that we're going to go ahead and have another, you know, market that indeed goes up. And I'm looking forward to going along for the ride. So that is my diatribe for the day. It is basically a digital first sale doctrine bypass that's profoundly important.
So I love it, and I can't disagree with anything you're saying, but I know there'll be detractors, and I welcome anyone who wants to make the counter argument that this is just a Beanie Baby bubble and that people got caught up in the FOMO and the exuberance, and that these things essentially now have been revealed as being essentially worthless, and that we all got caught up in the moment. Do you see the values coming back to where they are, or do you see it evolving in a different direction?
I see the point you raised, while being valid, being different than the point I addressed. I'm addressing the importance of the NFT technology as a way for folks to be able to do collectability online in a lawful way. I think your point goes more towards, well, don't sell stuff people don't like. There's a whole bunch of artists out there whose art is still worth something, maybe down in value, but it's not worthless. And so for me, it's like, just don't sell JPEGs or pump and dumps and things of that nature, but figure out ways in which you extend maybe what you're doing off-chain into something that's on-chain. I think part of the problem that we have is that when people use the word brand online, they talk about a brand as being like the very first type of JPEG or whatever they come out with, and that's their brand. How about actually creating an offline business with a brand and extending that online and that being your brand, you know, the video game industry, what have you. We're going to start seeing more and more of that, but I don't think that a lot of NFTs being worthless is an indictment on NFTs. I think the fact that we can actually determine that they're worthless is actually encouragement that NFT technology could show off with great efficiency, economic value in a way that could be measured. So that's my response.
No, you nailed it, because you gave me exactly the punchline that I wanted for today's topic, which was, can we take something good out of this article and out of what's trending right now, and can we cast this in a positive light? I tend to agree with you, and that's why I put it down in my blog post, that I think we can. I think that as we see more of the network effect kick in here, as we see more market sentiment shift, I don't think the underlying technology in any sense is going to go away. I think people are going to continue to innovate on the technology. And while we may not see another Bored Ape Yacht Club type of a magical mint and run up in price, I think we'll continue to see utility in this technology. And look, we're going through a very down market right now across the board. There's a lot of fear right now about recession coming, inflation. But I think overall, there's still much to be done in this space. And kudos to the people that are keeping their head down and doing it.
You know, one of the things that we should think about in this down market, where let's say it's hard to sell art NFTs or PFP membership NFTs, is the notion that it gives us time to enhance the technology, to include things like on-chain royalties. Because why would somebody who's an artist in this market, what would encourage them to sell their art at what they consider to be a massive discount because of the macroeconomic problems that we're having? They wouldn't, but they would if they had on-chain royalties, ones that can't be taken away by the whims of folks who want to create different platforms to pad their own pockets. If artists knew that if they sell in a down market, that one day when the market returns, they'll be getting an on-chain royalty auto-magically appearing in their wallets, as they should, they'll sell in the down market, which would then spur the entire NFT economy, at least for artists. So I think it's time for us to actually have a industry-wide reflection on what happened over the last few years. Look at this as the post-pandemic era, and then rise from the ashes like a phoenix, and we use technologies that will include on-chain royalties.
You know, royalties is definitely part of the conversation. We're seeing it in FriendTech and what FriendTech is now doing with respect to the volume of transactions going on over there, and what is probably one of the biggest motivations for people wanting to jump into that. It's the opportunity to make royalties, which has essentially disappeared in the NFT space. Now, you're talking creator royalties. This is a different paradigm where we're still looking at user royalties for getting in and out of people's keys. But it's definitely something that pushes attention. It's still essentially a gambling paradigm in NFTs. Do you see that evolving? I know we can have dedicated marketplaces for creator royalties, but what about for the particular holders and their incentive to buy and sell? Is that essentially over, in your opinion?
I think there could be great incentives for folks to buy and sell art and other things online using NFTs if folks could trust the technology. And I think that, again, on-chain royalties matter a lot, even to collectors. because that's also going to allow the artists to be able to do these types of things full time and help stand by and promote and do great customer service. And, you know, even Friend Tech to a certain extent has introduced to us a different paradigm. And one of which shows both promise as well as concern at the same time. For the life of me, with Friend Tech, first, they don't have a privacy policy, which one would argue would make the entire enterprise de facto illegal, because in most Western civilizations, you have to have a privacy policy or boom, illegal. And then if, you know, but then they get the privacy policy, but I haven't been able to find any terms of use. And when you're counting on folks to be influencers and to essentially de facto promote, you know, something like a Friend Tech, you should give them the comfort of having terms of use. So there's limitations of liability and class action waivers and expectations of consumers. And those are, you know, people are buying these things. You got to remember they're consumers and they ought to know what they're getting and what the terms of it are. And perhaps for the sake of influencers, they ought to know that if an influencer decides they want to retire, it's not going to be considered to be a wire fraud or a rug pull or whatever you want to call it. So there's all sorts of warts that are going on still in this space where a consultation with a Web3 lawyer for, you know, an hour or two could possibly have alleviated all that. And so it's going to be a really hard, a hard play to basically say to certain influencers, come on board. For example, you could definitely see crypto influencers doing Friend Tech because they're all about risk taking and their followers are like-minded. But are you going to get a Steph Curry who has deals with, you know, Under Armour and has to really protect the integrity and credibility of their persona and their rights to publicity, and they want to work maybe with Disney one day? Are you going to get those folks to come on board where there's no privacy policy? And then there's, you know, I haven't seen terms. I'm open to seeing them, but no terms of use that set expectations where they could be sued into oblivion as well. I really, really doubt it. So I see it as a massive niche, not because the technology is poor, but for the love of God, they couldn't spend a few hours with the Web3 lawyers to make it not suck out of the gates.
That makes sense. But if you're only a few hours and some diligence away from that, competitors will arise and it will evolve. And you might see a Steph Curry on a different version of this technology. It seems to me the paradigm shift with Friend Tech went from it's about the art and it's about decentralization and it's about freedom to transact and about royalties. That was the bull run core values. Once royalties went away, it seems everyone moves to where the royalties are, where there's no decentralization, no privacy policy, no freedom to transact outside of their gated wall. It seems like every other core value was given up, not given up, but it doesn't exist on the Friend Tech side of things. So that's kind of the difference that I see, that it shows that Carlo called it the gambling aspect. I just see it like that financial aspect really drives things.
It's basically an enterprise tipping system that has some interesting economics associated with it. But we can't, you know, there's all sorts of influencers and the kind of risks they're willing to take. There's a huge number of crypto influencers who don't care about the niceties of what I was saying.
Precisely. And OnlyFans as well. Like OnlyFans is a is a centralized platform that takes a significant amount of the creator's generated money. And so this technology I can see ending up in many forms. The right now the niche I agree is the crypto NFT folks who are bored during this market.
You know, I have to tend to agree. And Ira, you brought up a couple of points that I had observed very, very early on in this technology. It's essentially turning the influencer into a fractionalized NFT. And one of the interesting observations as far as mainstreaming and onboarding is exactly this issue of, I kind of posted about this. It's the FrenTech is the Hotel California of decentralized apps, because you can check in, you can start an account, you can connect your Twitter to it, you can open up a wallet, but there is no functionality at this point to turn it off. You can log off the app, but it doesn't stop people from being able to trade on your wallet address. So for purposes of celebrities and so forth, I do see that as being an interesting paradigm and something that may have to evolve here before they have a comfort, because you nailed it. Someone like Seth Curry has a brand. And are they risking diluting their brand because they're upsetting people who own keys and who have now this expectation of delivery, but there's no way to walk away from this if it's not exactly the right fit? And we saw some of that pushback this weekend, because there were some influencers who were selling their own shares, and they got a lot of FUD in the space.
You know, one of the things, if I had to feather fluff for a second, Carlo, was when back at NFT NYC last year, you came to our rollout of Tree Trunk and our on-chain royalty NFT technology. What we had baked into Tree Trunk and showed off to these artists was a situation where not only did they have on-chain royalties, but at Consensus, we built the technology that once you own the NFT from the artist, you automatically had access to a private chat room with the artist and the other holders. And that was built into the Tree Trunk interface. So you own the NFT. It was basically now a token gate to your chat session. And we did that in part because we found that we'll call it customer service. But when you have it so distributed with on-chain royalties where there's no central servers, we had to have a way for the artist or the creator owner to be able to interact with customers for all sorts of customer service issues, hacks, you know, community alerts. And, you know, the best way to do it was with people who actually owned it rather than on Twitter. And so we built that technology in. And which is pretty much what FrenTech has in terms of, like, you buy a token and now you can talk in a chat. We had that going. I still think the best way to do that is actually really is decentralized, because that would be kind of a game changer. But the problem that we found was that based upon our simulations, there's a certain percentage of people who were bad, and they'd write bad and nasty things, and they become kind of, with some folks, potential harassers. And when it's completely decentralized, you can't go ahead and have, you know, community moderators. And so we saw a degradation. And so we didn't make it available yet at NFT NYC back in 2022. Here, you're going to probably have the same thing. I don't know to what extent they can moderate it, and to what extent it's decentralized. And if it's not decentralized, that's ironic. But be careful of what you ask for, because if folks, you know, want to be disruptive in a bad way to an artist or to an influencer, they could destroy the entire chat channel very, very, very quickly. And these are the sorts of things that would do really well to have terms of use associated with it. So there's ways to actually stop people from chatting, even if they hold the token, if they're not meeting certain criteria. And so if they could have just, and I don't know, maybe they have thought these things through, and if so, I apologize in advance, but they have to think these things through so that this is a defensible business model and not some short-term burst.
As I understand it, Ira, I think to an extent they have thought it through, because I was listening to a space about this, and there's a mechanism within the chat where it's not a free stream of chat that you can actually see, like in Discord. You can only see a comment if the holder of that chat room responds to the comment. So I guess if I'm understanding it correctly, that is one safeguard against being spammed or getting a lot of hate speech in there. It's at the discretion of the holder as to which ones they comment on. And those are the ones that get seen by the rest of the people who hold keys, if I'm understanding the tech correctly.
Yeah, and so that's good to hear, by the way, on the technological front. But it still would benefit massively from terms of use. And again, a way for folks to have a graceful wind down. So if someone wants to retire or not participate at all and they're an influencer, that then, you know, someone's not going to go ahead and file a ridiculous class action lawsuit or something over it.
Yeah, we've talked about this because now that we, quote unquote, have all these NFT projects that went to zero and are worthless, you've got all these founders that are sitting on these this infrastructure that they have to continue to run for a project that doesn't have any revenue, and there's really no exit strategy because everything is on chain and is sitting there forever. And I think largely this is a nice transition for the conversation about this Rolling Stone article and NFTs being worthless, because NFTs launched in a similar fashion. We were preaching for a long time about, you know, you need to get with a Web3 lawyer. And a lot of projects dropped without those safeguards and those measures in place. And then they started to experience the growing pains very quickly as the project caught traction. And there's no reason to believe it won't be the same for this iteration of blockchain technology, because there will be, as Jenko very rightly observed, I'm sure there'll be competitors who'll come on. They'll put price pressure by offering lower royalties. And who knows, maybe it becomes a rush to zero royalties, although I just can't see how that would be a beneficial business model for anyone involved in this. But it remains to be seen. I think it's a good conversation to have, and I think it's definitely going to evolve. I don't think you can put this genie back in the bottle. It caught a lot of traction very fast. Jenko, any closing thoughts before we wrap for today?
No, great discussion. I appreciate Ira and everyone who joined. Thanks again, Carlo, for doing the hard work every day. That was a really great discussion. I think your baseball card tweet really summed up that article. I don't want to give it more traction than it deserves. Thanks for all the commentary, and thanks for everyone who joined.
Yeah, this was great. It was great to have you back in the house, Jenko, and Ira, great to hear from you. And thank you to everyone, as always, who takes time to join. We'll be back at it next week, and I'll get this out, clip it up. We'll have some good stuff to clip out on this one for sure. And you can always catch it on podcast format if you missed us today. All right, everyone have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk soon.